Well, greetings, friends, and welcome to the Gospel Underground Podcast. This is episode 172. Do what to others? The golden rule, Jesse, our life in the borderlands. We are broadcasting live, well, live for us from our worldwide shed quarters here in Winter's trying to come back. Oh, no, she didn't. In Blacksburg, Virginia. It got cold, Jesse, got for cold. A couple days.
It got cold.
Worried about these leaves on that tree outside. They look a little tired, look a little scared, they'll make a comeback, I think. Jesse,
they'll bounce back.
Speaking of comebacks, we're back.
We're back.
It's been a couple months before you and I have been together because of our amazingly difficult to correlate schedules.
Not to mention there was at least once, maybe twice, where we got together and we just talked and ran out of time.
Such are the needs of life. One of the things you guys, we may have shared this before, but when we get together here in the shed quarters, sometimes we just like to talk about life, family, ministry, plans, whatever's going on, church. And sometimes we're like, yeah, that's enough for today. Let's not podcast, but somebody asked me recently, how often do you podcast? I was like, well, ideally twice a month, but usually once a month right now. But we're back. It's April. We're back together. We're starting a new series today, and we're looking forward to that. But Jesse, before we get to that, you were telling me that something's going on in...
Yeah, so I was telling you about... you know what? I didn't show you this, though. This is pretty cool.
What is that? Is that like a Ridge wallet? What is
it? It looks like a Ridge wallet. It's something my son made. My son Elijah is 15, and he saved up enough money working mowing lawns and whatnot to buy himself a 3D printer.
Wow!
So
and he made that.
He made that. Yeah, he made that. He's making all kinds of stuff.
I need to buy one from him and not pay $100 or whatever.
So he's just making like the. I don't want to say the goofiest stuff. But, you know, imagine being 15 and you were like, he made himself this Star-Lord mask that's like a full, it fits all over us from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, of course he did. But
I'm trying to get, I'm like a little more like, hey, why don't you make like 20 of those Ridge wallets?
Yeah.
Let's sell them to my friends.
Absolutely.
Make you some money. But yeah, it's pretty cool, man. We set it up in my study, which is about the same size as yours.
Yeah.
And so he's got his little setup over there.
Is he doing like CAD stuff where he designs it on computer?
He's doing some designing on his own.
Yeah.
Right now, a lot of it is just
files he can get.
Yep. Yes. Yep. But it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun doing it together. So I'll be out there working and he'll come out and fiddle with his printer and get his thing set up. And he's printing these air soccer balls airless soccer.
They're like geodesic dome kind of things.
Yep.
They're hollow in the middle.
Exactly. So he's making those as like gifts for friends.
Nice.
It's pretty fun.
Well, Jesse, it's funny. You and I have been talking about this because whenever we do anything on the podcast related to being parents, the numbers are just really good. Like, you know, there are people like that. So we've even thought through like, what is our audience here? It's growing like crazy. We're at all time high right now. People listening in, our tenet was that we're always going to be a dialogue taking place in the borderlands between the church and culture. And in the heart of it is the gospel, we want to influence other people. And so, man, I was thinking out loud with you maybe a couple months ago saying, you know what, it makes sense because the things that we would talk about for raising kids or influencing kids takes place in the borderlands and is an investment in someone coming to see the beauty of Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, the work I do, say, with people in the world, college students or whatever, trying to lead people to Christ, is the same kind of influence in the borderlands. And so we're just embracing that.
Yeah.
Even now... you know, I love hearing you and your son doing something together because that's part of how we influence people is by being with them, usually around things that they love. And making a Star-Lord helmet sounds pretty awesome to me. And so we're going to transition to a series where we're going to talk about this rule that Jesus gives, the golden rule. We'll break that down today, but we're going to talk about how do we want to influence other people. That could be your kids. That could be people you're trying to talk to about the gospel at work or school. Because the golden rule of Jesus actually encourages us. He commands us even to think through, hey, how do I want to engage these people? and in what posture and fashion. And I think as we go into this, we're going to, I hope, come alive a little bit to standing next to other people in these borderlands, these cultural realities where there's influences all around, so that we might point people to Jesus by a faithful presence. And so I've called this episode, Do What to Others? Because look, we can treat people, right, Jesse? You know, we treat our wives a certain way, mostly good, I assume. Sometimes our wives treat us only good. But what do we do to other people in this world? It's kind of wild to think about, right? The effect people have on one another, particularly in when you're in a relationship with somebody, right?
That's right. Should we
do evil to them?
I love this topic and I love the idea of exploring this topic in different sort of arenas or ways to do it as we look ahead. I was thinking about this, Reed. I didn't even tell you this beforehand, but I was thinking about this because I was talking with a few friends recently about how many conversations that are hard for me that it almost is like, did you forget for a little bit that I'm a person?
Yes.
Like, did you just forget that? Think about if someone was doing what you're doing right now to you.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
They can't because they're doing it.
Right? I've stopped a couple of conversations in the last year to just say, hey, I just want to remind you I'm a person.
Yeah. I know you're upset about life or church or whatever, but yeah, I'm a person. You know, a couple of years ago with the wrestling team, they wanted to talk about sex, you know, how we should be focused, you know, with our bodies and things in the world. And I gave them what I call the very first principle of moral action, which we all would agree on. Do good to people and shun evil, right? I think even Thomas Aquinas said that. That's the very first principle. We should do the good and shun the evil. But yeah, it's a little bit sometimes more complicated than that, is it not?
It is, yeah. But I think that's helpful to think through, Reed, to bring that up as like the first principle. We all get it, right? Yeah. And in some ways,
we ought to do good. We ought not to do bad.
That's right. Yeah. Right. And so we're going to look today at some of the at how Jesus sort of takes that thing. How do we live our life? How do we treat others? How do we live considering that we are in a world designed by God?
That's right.
That we have a king and he has a kingdom and a way of life. So how can we then apply that in the borderlands between the church and culture?
Because we have to believe it's possible, right? I can live a certain way or not live a certain way.
I can shun evil.
Yeah.
I can do good. This is possible. So
that's right.
A few categories as we sort of set out from the beginning, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A few categories about moral instruction. How do we know this? How do we know that there's good and there's evil and we should shun it? Some of this is just what we would call under the category of moral ontology. That is, that there really do exist moral truths.
Yeah, yeah. For you guys, I'm familiar with philosophy. The word ontology has to do with what is real.
Yeah, the study of reality or being.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
In other words, there is such a thing as good.
That's right.
There it's real. There is such a thing as really good, and it's real. Yep. Yeah, go ahead.
And we can do it, right? But if you don't believe, say, in this is what we'd call moral realism, that moral truths or moral actions are real, not just culturally relative, or hey, sometimes lying is cool, sometimes it's not cool. Sometimes murdering people, I want to do it, right? So I'm allowed to do it, or we make it up as we go. That's moral relativism, or kind of constructing your own morality as you go, either individually, we call those psychopaths, or culturally, you know, say where evil takes over a society, right? Yeah. But moral realism says the moral ontology of moral truths is really real.
Yep. Yeah. It's really real, right? And then there's a category we would call moral epistemology, which is essentially the study of how we know stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, how do we know how can we have reasonable beliefs about something?
That's right. Like, okay, there are moral truths, but when I'm five, I'll still punch somebody in the sandbox, perhaps. Maybe maybe I need to have
instruction.
That's a word from Proverbs, right? Yeah. Instruction in the wise living in the good, right?
Yeah. And even if you think about things like do good and shun evil, there's something that there is good, there is evil. We do, though, need instruction. How do I know whether it's good or evil?
That's right. Parents, you guys know this.
Yeah.
You got to teach kids, right? You teach them right from wrong. And we even see, like, if somebody isn't taught right from wrong, their life goes poorly.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Because moral truths, moral realism is as real as gravity.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's
so
right.
If you become a liar in your life, it's probably not going to go well for you because it's breaking these moral truths, moral laws that God has given.
That's right.
They flow from his nature. Yep.
And then so you've
But
got,
I don't know them all.
Yeah.
So,
we don't know them all.
So we have to learn.
Yep. And our learning helps us to correspond with what's real, what's true.
That's right.
Good, what's evil. But because life is complex, there's a whole nother category. And Jesus really speaks into this, and that's moral wisdom. That is what to do, when to do it, how to do it. How do we sort of flow in the borderlands when we might be faced with much more complicated issues than we were in the sandbox when we were five?
That's right. Like, hey, don't punch Susie and apologize for doing that, you know. But like, say if Susie had a dagger someday, was chasing down Tommy, maybe we tackle Susie.
You might want to punch Susie or tackle Susie, right? I mean, you know, you think about this in terms of war or police officers or restraining someone who's evil, who's going to attack someone who's innocent. Suddenly, the rules of engagement have changed
from when
you're just sort of like at the coffee shop.
That's right.
You know, or you might think through, we were talked about this a little beforehand, but like, yeah, lying is bad. Telling the truth is good.
That's right.
But then if you're hiding Jews in 1940 in Germany and someone, you know, they come to the door and say,
do you have any peoples here?
You know, it becomes very serious and it's complex. And now this is a question of wisdom. How do I apply these truths that I've learned about living. So Jesus speaks into this and gives us this really wise rule. I'll read from Matthew 7:12. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets.
Okay. So guys, the reason why we wanted to set the table that way is that we have to know there is a good way to live. We need to learn from it. We can be taught. Jesus can be our teacher and give us a rule for our lives that can help us live wisely in the borderlands, right? And so, I don't know. Jesse, how are you about rules? Like, you know, different siblings and families. Like, we have, like, Kylie, my middle daughter, she wanted everyone to follow the rules, man.
Yeah.
She probably still does. She hates injustice. She'd like, you should do what's right.
We've got a middle kid in our family who's very much wants to make sure everyone follows the rules.
That's right. And there's others that are like, rules? what are rules? I'm a little bit that way.
I'm probably more that way.
I like God's rules.
Yeah.
And the rest, I'm like, you know, those are negotiable, right?
I agree. That's where I am.
And so I want to, because I know some of you listening, there are some rule followers listening. There are some rule breakers, perhaps, rebels listening. And there's probably some people in between that just watch these folks and wonder what's happening.
Yeah, you could almost say, to riff on that a little bit, that there are some of us who are predisposed to think every rule is good. If it's a rule, it is good.
That's right.
And there are some of us who are on the other end. If it is a rule, it is bad.
That's right.
We probably don't want to live in either one of those extremes.
Probably not.
Right?
So let me give us a few reminders about rules. Okay. First reminder, bad rules are bad. Good rules are good. And some rules are just rules. Now what I mean by that, Jesse,
that's pretty good.
Some rules could crush someone's humanity, hold down their God-given freedom and abilities, prevent us from doing what's right, and do not flow from his truth or goodness. Unjust laws, right? That's why nonviolent civil disobedience has always been part of the Christian tradition, because when you see bad rules, we are not obligated to disobey God in order to follow the rules of people. We see this in the Apostle, judge for yourselves what is right. Should we obey God or obey you, right? In other words, some rules are just rules. Like, If you go to the United Kingdom, they might drive on a different side of the road, right? Or if you go to a different place where they have different street signs, they might mean different things, right? Turn in your homework, students, by a certain due date, right? It's not bad or good. It's just the rule, yeah. right? Yeah.
Brush your teeth twice a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's maybe you're in wisdom now, but yeah. It's not necessarily, you're not like doing a moral evil.
That's right. That's right. It's just a rule. Wear a mask. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, guys.
No, I think it's safe now.
Don't go crazy on that. You know? And so bad rules, we're not obligated to obey them. Some are just rules, drive on the left side of the road. There are rules that God has that are very good for us.
Yeah.
These help guide what Jesus would call our way in life, right? They give us wisdom. And this this rule is going to the golden rule, has so much wisdom for us. So that's our first reminder. Some rules are bad, some are good, some are just rules, just it's okay. Second reminder is this, and this comes from the wisdom literature of the Old Testament in the book of Proverbs. This is Proverbs 16:25. There is a way that seems right to a man, okay? This seems right to me, but in the end, is the way of death.
Mm.
Okay, this is a shocking thing that should give us all pause, right? We should stop and say, "Whoa, you mean there's a way I think I ought to go, but at the end there's death. There's a cliff we're going to go." And here's the thing, Jesus, right? He is kind enough to give us warnings about these things. Sometimes we listen, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have to learn the hard way, right? But because Jesus is good and wise, and he is all good and all knowing, he will give us warnings and then rules for a way for us to live, right? Yeah. And this is what we have, Jesse, and what has come down to us known as the golden rule. And I do think this is probably a little underutilized by Christians in discipling one another. I don't know if it's because we don't want to be trying to base our salvation on works or trying to prove our goodness to God or anything, but here
I wonder too if there might be a sense. I suspect there is. There's also probably a sense of that's like kid stuff. That's so familiar.
You learn that in the catechism
right.
when you're five or something.
Yeah, that's so familiar that it's like we all get that. Let's move on to the other stuff. And I think maybe we don't all get it.
That's right. And so hopefully, guys, for you who are listening, I want to really blow that up and say, this is a valuable, valuable teaching from Jesus, the golden rule that is eminently helpful in your everyday life and relationships, right? So here it is again, Matthew 7, verse 12. So whatever you wish that others would do for you, so you're imagining what others could do for you, right? Would do for you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Now, this ending is kind of interesting, right? Jesus teaches us that his words here, right? Whatever you wish others would do to you, do also to them, sums up or summarizes the law and the prophets, like the whole Old Testament, right? He also says this another time. Jesse, how about you read this? This is where Jesus is articulating what has come down to us to be known as the great commandments, to love God and love our neighbor. He also uses this phrase, law and the prophets. Why don't you go ahead and read that for us?
Yeah. Also in Matthew 22, verses 34 to 40. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets.
Okay, so here we go, Jesse. Quite literally, succinctly, and simply, in the great commandments to love God with everything we are, and to love our neighbor as ourselves, and the golden rule, right? We have the Bible of Jesus, the Old Testament, summarized. Mm. Now, I know some of you like using, when we were kids, what would we call them? Cliff Notes?
Yeah, now, Cliff Notes. It's not that now.
I don't know. Now they have cheat GPT. So, like, what are we doing? What are we even doing here? But when you have... when you have something that can summarize a large volume of stuff very succinctly, it can be very a valuable tool for us. Now, for us, why would we value having this kind of shorthand? Well, it's because it's practical, right? When I live my life, is what am I doing? Loving towards God or loving towards people? How am I treating them, right? This articulation from Jesus is unique to him. Now, this has been looked at by moral philosophers, people who study history, right? Jesus does not say, remember all the bad stuff people have done to you that you don't like, and don't do that, right? This has actually been called by many moral philosophers the silver rule, okay? He doesn't say, look at all the bad, don't do the bad to stuff.
Yeah.
He actually calls them to something different, to say, use your imagination.
Imagine,
what would you wish? Right? What would you wish? And the interesting thing here, Jesse, not to get too nerdy, he's asking us to use our moral imagination. So whatever you wish, this is actually in a mood in Greek, in the original New Testament, right? The word wish is in the subjunctive mood. Literally, this very way of speaking was used when you hope or wish with the future in mind. Mm. It's built into the word itself. Whatever you wish others would do to you, this is what guides our actions now and into the future. This is interesting, the way I wrote it here, Jesse. People, they get what you wish for. So that's kind of wild when you think about it.
Yeah.
They should be treated, or they should get.
Give people what you wish for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you wish someone would be kind to you, well, be kind to them.
Yeah.
If you wish someone would spend time with you, give time to them. It's a wonderful thing to imagine how to treat people fairly and justly and goodly, right? And then do that, right? This positive call to action is what we've called the golden rule, right? Those that tell you what not to do, people have called the silver rule. And the silver rule does exist in other traditions, the Buddhist tradition. This is hurt not others in ways you would yourself find hurtful. This is in the Undandavarga 518, the Confucian tradition of China. Never impose on others what you would not choose for yourself, right? It's this kind of don't do that. And then the tradition, a Jewish tradition, the Rabbi Hillel, what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. This is the whole Torah. The rest is commentary. Go and learn. This was quoted in Scott McKnight's book on the Sermon on the Mount. The difference is Jesus goes a step further and just says, hey, don't think about what you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Dream, wish what you could have done to you, and then go and do that. This shapes our moral conscience, our moral imagination, and will be. Now, think about this. Many times when we think about, hey, if I'm going to be good to people, love people, Jesus, well, what if they take advantage of me? What if they treat me badly? Why should I do that? Why don't more people get in on this way of living, right? Why, Jesse, can't we just read this of Jesus and say, oh, Eureka, we found this beautiful...
Yeah, what makes this hard even when he... I mean, certainly, you know, we're selfish, we're self-centered, we are self, you know... protective.
Yeah.
We have selfish ambition. We want to grow ourselves rather than grow others.
That's right.
You know, and even as you think about it, Reed, this came to mind as you were talking. It came to mind that in some ways this is only possible for us because of Christ.
That's right.
And it never clicked until you were just talking how incarnational the golden rule is in comparison to these silver rules.
Yeah.
Because it's moving into and towards rather than simply saying, look, I won't cross your border, you don't cross my border. Like, no, I'm gonna cross your border with the blessing that I wish
I was
receiving.
You so you won't smack me back. It's proactive and it's originative, right? From your heart, right? Imagine something and then go and do good. Now, if you could yourself imagine people doing that, imagine being married and thinking about, hey, how would I like to be treated by my spouse? Maybe I should do that. It's quite an amazing teaching here that he gives us. But we are self-interested. We want to preserve what's mine. We're fearful, right? And this is where, you know, salvation by grace through faith, right? That great doctrine. We're not saved because we obey the golden rule or obey the great commandment, that we do always love God or we always love people. We're sinful, so we know we don't. Yeah. We break the law and the prophets, right? So we need forgiveness and grace, restoration.
Yeah.
But then called to live a life of obedience to God, right?
Yeah. And you're right. And with that calling, we need Christian imagination for blessing. Because some of, when you ask the question, why don't we get in on this? Some of the answer is because I've tried it and I got hurt.
That's right.
Like, you know, some of it is I tried to be kind and I got crushed.
That's hard.
And I've been disappointed. And over time, I start to get like, well, look, I don't want to be disappointed. I'm going to build a little barrier here. I'm not going to give. That's where the gospel really has to come in. And not just forgive us, but also sort of reopen that the pathways for us to dream again about, you know, I could be kind. I could be kind and still get hurt.
Yeah.
And that would be okay because Christ was hurt in his kindness to me.
And he was kind to me. When you know, it's a little bit of what we talked about, or I shared last time, Jesse, in the last episode, why should we try to do difficult things? Well, when we're free in God, when he's got our back, when he's been good to us, then we can take risk, right?
Amen.
We can take risk. Now, here's something very interesting to me. In Jesus' teaching, remember, this is in the long teaching called the Sermon on the Mount. This is towards the end of that version in the Gospel of Matthew. Right, the very next thing he says. So he literally says the golden rule, right? However you wish others should treat you, do also to other people. Then the very next verse is this: enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate, and easy is the way that leads to destruction, and those who enter it by are many. So the very next verse is like, hey, not everybody's living this way. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to follow me. There's going to be a whole lot of people going on easy street, going toward destruction. Remember, there's a way that seems right to man. In the end, it leads to death. Many are going that way. But then he says in verse 14, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. And this is why I really do believe that Jesus said to find our life, we have to lose it first. Mm. We have to be willing to die to ourselves and live to God. We have to be forgiven. We have to be made new. We have to have a new spirit in us, right? We have to have a new creation birthed in us by the gospel so that our want to is not just selfish self-preservation. Don't punk me. You punk me, I punk you back. This revenge culture that exists in the world. We have to have a new life to want to go this narrow way because you're going to be different. And many times people are afraid to go along that path because they are scared, right, that you might get hurt there. But here's the thing. Like you said, Jesus, who's been kind to us, to die for us, to call us friends, to give up his life for us, to give us a new pathway, if we're following him, man, we're probably in the best of place, even though the way to others might seem narrow.
That's good. You know, in circling back around as we're getting ready to close, thinking about the moral epistemology, learning from Jesus. Jesus makes this way possible and then invites us to, like, basically be with him.
That's right.
And it's as I'm with him.
As our teacher.
He's teaching. He's showing.
As our example, right? He's showing. We're learning what is good. And then he gives us the power through his spirit to do it.
Amen. Right? Amen. Let me read my guy. My guy, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, says this. And Bonhoeffer has written, you know, for listeners, if you want to, the cost of discipleship in particular is Bonhoeffer's commentary on the Sermon on the Mount. And so he really gets in there. And he says this: but if I see Jesus Christ walking ahead of me, step by step, if I look only at him and follow him step by step, then I will be protected on this path.
Yes. What a beautiful image that if the way is narrow and difficult and hard, Even if, you know, there are many dangers, toils, and snares, even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, the 23rd Psalm says, if we see him, well, we follow him.
Yeah.
Step by step, he leads us through this life into the life to come, where in the kingdom of heaven, it'll be a kingdom of light and love, not sin and selfishness, where the golden rule is the rule on golden streets, and we will be together in a different kind of place.
Amen.
That Jesus audaciously called the kingdom of heaven. Jesse, thanks for joining me. It's always a pleasure. The Gospel Underground podcast is produced in partnership with the Bonhoeffer House.
You got the hat on.
Yeah, I do. Got the hat on today. Review us on iTunes or Spotify. 5 stars. Please do review us. If you haven't done that, please go write us up a little thing. Say, hey, we love this podcast. It does help with visibility. Share with your friends as you're doing. We're hitting all-time highs. Send your comments, feedback, questions you might want us to take up here on The Underground to info@gospelunderground.org. We are a dialogue taking place in the borderlands between the church and culture. And we hope to see you out there on his way, living that rule. Thanks, guys.
Peace.